You're listening to Simple Flight Aviation Radio with Al Waterloo and Mark Heppner on www.simpleflight.net.
What do you think about flying? Is it a sport? A business? Is it easy or difficult? Is it boring or exciting? Alan Waterloo and Mark Heppner think it may be any of those things, but they like to make it simple. This is Simple Flight Radio, where Mark and Al talk about the many aspects of aviation and the amazing people doing amazing things to make this world a better place.
Money. Anytime I hear an engine start and I hear money, I know it's got to be something to do with aviation.
Yeah, you're getting pretty good at those controls over there.
Yeah, I'm looking them, and I'm hoping everything is coming across. I know I'll get a tweet here if it's not. This is Mark Heppner, and at 8 o'clock on Sunday night, and that can only mean one thing, and that, of course, is Simple Flight Aviation Radio. Now, something else is different, though. And that is, I'm looking across the table. I don't see Al Waterloo.
I saw him. He actually just took off.
Yeah, that too. How does that happen? He took off and he's not here. So who the heck are you?
The other Alex, the real Alex.
The real Alex, yeah. So Alex Catullus joining us because, as he just indicated, over my left shoulder, there goes Al Waterloo. It's off to Doylestown, I think, Pennsylvania, in the King Air. He just rotated off and waved, gave a little wing rock. Maybe he did, maybe not. And he's not here tonight, so we're going to go without the King, the Master, if you will. And I'm playing around with dials and things here, hoping that I'm not over-boosting everybody. And so if you're having a problem with audio, let us know. You can tweet me at M. Heppner, M-E-P-N-E-R. And we'll see what happens. Anyway, Alex, thank you for standing in for other Alex.
Oh, no problem. It's like the old Johnny Carson show. He's out. You're Jay Leno, and I get to play Ed McMahon, taking your place over there.
There you go. I don't know if I like that. So I'm Jay Leno.
I guess we'll make you Jay Leno too. You're sitting in Johnny's chair. So
that's right. That's right. Well, it's an interesting day to say the least. We've got a few things that are happening here. We've got Al out. We had a guest that was arranged that unfortunately couldn't make it. So we're going to go a little potpourri tonight, a little potluck, and see what comes up. So we usually start talking about what we've done in aviation this week. Tell me, what have you been doing this week in aviation?
I did nothing, actually, this week. I wanted to try to get up, but it didn't happen. And reason being was the Cirrus was next door in Hangar 6, had to get its 50-hour oil change, its 100-hour AD for the exhaust. And I think if you remember, the detent was a little stuck again, so they repaired that. And
Again.
And Al actually took a ride with my partner in it, and he says it's just still running like a champ. You know, as much as I wanted to buy something faster, I would just hate the idea of selling something that's running so good. But you know, Tom took it out. He said it was really nice, and they did a nice trip, those two, out to Dubuque and back, and did a little bit of IFR training. So I haven't got up yet. I think I may be going up next week though with Al, and you know, giving him a ride to Duluth, I think.
Yeah, I hear he's got a great trip coming up next week. We're actually going to be flying a Cirrus or two down to Chile.
Right.
That's a pretty awesome trip.
Right. So he wants to get out there Friday. I think he has to leave Saturday morning, and he said he's probably going to be in fly about 11 hours, I think, that first that first day is what it sounded like, he said.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's, he just can't believe he's doing that. And I'm just like, I wouldn't know how to get there.
Well, you said something that I want to talk a little bit about, and that was you're talking about maybe getting some faster, and we use the money song to kick things off. Want to talk about how we can reduce the cost of flying tonight, but I was thinking about you as well. You want to get into something more, and I, for those that don't know you, you go crazy with, do I want an SR-22 instead of my SR-20? Do I want a twin? Do I want a wide body? Do I want a little, you know, what? What's going through your mind? I mean, how are you rationalizing this, and how do you put some direction to it?
Well, the best way to put the direction to it is this way. I can almost tell you that my wife made the decision for me. And when we went together, when all of us went down to St. Louis, when we went out for lunch and we met Al down there with the guy that he picked up the new Cirrus SR-22, and then you came down with the 22, and you know, I was talking to my wife about this twin. We should go take it for a ride. This guy invited me out if we want to go burn some gas. And she's like, you know, I'm really not interested, she said. And I go, really? She goes, I really like the idea of the parachute. And, you know, and it's true. I mean, I like the idea of it too. As you know, I'm almost like a night flyer. At some point in time, I think I'll have more night hours than I'll have day hours is kind of the goal. And, you know, like I said, she's really comfortable with that, and she's the one that's going to be sitting in the right seat. So I guess that's probably, you know, where I would probably turn to eventually at some point in time. You know, so I guess she can make the decision for me a lot easier. And, I think when I spoke with your wife, I mean, she likes the idea of that too. And, you know, and some people will knock it. I mean, don't get me wrong. I get harassed so many times about, hey, Alex, you think you can fly something without the parachute? You know, and that sort of thing. And in fact, when we went to go eat at that place, I forgot the name of it in St. Louis when we flew into Lambert.
Yeah, it's the barbecue place across the highway, across Interstate 70, and it's not coming to me.
Right. So anyway, when they had the crew car that the guys were taking us back and forth, and we were switching over and, you know, jumping on board, and then that signature van came on by, there was a couple of guys that were also eating there as well, and I think they were, you know, charter working for somebody. I mean, they had a King Air is what they had. And I don't know if I told you the story at all on that. So
we haven't told our listeners, so go for it.
So what ends up happening is we're getting ready to leave, and I saw the signature van. I said, hey, I got some more guys to come with you. So Carl, the gentleman that picked up the new Cirrus, and then Al, and then a couple other guys jumped into the van. And the two guys that were sitting in there said, hey, no Cirrus guys in here. You know, and I was just like, okay, here we go again, you know.
Yeah.
And I just asked them one question. I said, did you ever fly a Cirrus? And the answer was no. I said, then there's nothing to talk about yet.
Yeah, it's, you know, I have had so many people do that to me as well, where it's just based on reputation, and they're happy in their airplane, as they should be. They're all metal and all of that. I think you called the Cirrus a Clorox bottle.
Well, it was, I told you, I had called the Mooney Association for something, and the guy told me that they call it the Flying Clorox bottle, is what they call it. And, I'm like, oh yeah, okay, I get it. You know what I mean? And, my wife and I, we did fly the Mooney. We took up the Acclaim that was in that hangar where you used to park, your old Cirrus.
Oh, yeah, Atlantic, the other guys.
The other guys. And, you know, we took that up, and yeah, it probably wasn't a good day for my wife because, you know, puffy clouds, it was really bumpy and that sort of thing. But, again, she would be sitting in the right seat, but obviously she was sitting in the back, and she didn't like the way she was honest with me. She didn't like the way she felt in that. And I'm like, well, if you didn't like the way you felt in that Mooney, you're not going to like any of them because that's the long body.
Right.
And, I said, if you weren't comfortable in there, well, then there's just probably nothing to look at. I like the idea, like you always talk about, you know, raising that gear. You know, you're thinking almost, you know, you almost feel like a man.
almost
feel like a man. And I mean, that's what I always say when I see the twins, you know, flying by. They just sound different in the air. It's just cool, you know, but, you know, you have to want to spend the money on the gas.
Well, and I got a couple things to say. One, to the idea you just mentioned, when I fly the Bonanza, or I got to fly a Rockwell Commander, you know, cowl flaps, switches, gear, it does may get the testosterone going.
Did you take off from 1-6 yesterday?
I did.
I saw you. I was actually coming down Wolf Road. We were coming back from a flower shop. Pesci's over there in Des Plaines. And
yeah.
I saw us cruise past the airport. Came up Willow. I made a ride on Wolf, and I saw the Cirrus out there because I know Al was going to be going up with Tom. And then you guys were taxiing to take off at 1-6.
Yeah, so actually he flew. It was interesting. We were a little overweight prior, so he had to go up and fly for an hour. So I'm trying to think. He went up by himself to burn some fuel, then came back and got me. So I don't know if it was the first or second time.
But. Okay, if the Cirrus was still down here, then that's when I saw him. If the Cirrus was gone and you went up for a ride, and I didn't
see
him.
Yeah, you probably saw him. I think because they were gone when I left.
That's really a cool plane.
Well, for people, if you want to look it up online, it's 1316 Juliet, all black with a gold stripe down the side. You don't get to see that on many ramps, and it has real ramp presence. I love it.
Yeah, it's a neat plane. I remember, and we met him, or he flew out when we did that fly out to Janesville, is that
exactly.
right?
Exactly, yeah.
And I remember when he landed that day, I'm sitting there having breakfast with the guys, and I just see this black mark come across, and I turn around, like, what is that? And sure enough, it was him. And I'll be honest with you, I thought it was something bigger. I thought it was a Malibu, is what it looked like, because the way he came in, and, you know, it's just a bigger plane, you know, it just has a bigger feel to it when you look at it. And, it was neat. It's got the little Batman logo in the inside, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, exactly, on the yoke. Also, it has an interesting look. It kind of looks fast on the ground, and almost like the landing gear don't belong when they're extended. It sits a little high, but it has trailing link landing gear. And I only made one landing in it yesterday, but...
Now there's two versions of that, isn't there? Is it the 112 and the 114?
And then, and the 114 has a turbocharged model, 114 TC as well. This is the 112. So it's, you know, it's got a reputation for being a little underpowered, but you think back to 1975 and it had two doors. It's very wide, as as the Cirrus, you know, 48, I think it's 48 inches. So
yeah, and Cirrus 48.
There's no shoulder to shoulder.
Or 49 and a half.
It's about the same. And two doors. And that was unusual for back then, but it only has the 200 horse. And so people will tell you it's a little underpowered, but you know, it's a very comfortable airplane. And depending on where you're going, and it burns, but I think he's burning about 10 gallons an hour if he pulls it back, and it's got 70 gallon tanks. You can go for 7 hours with no reserve, but that's a long time to be up there.
Yeah. And where were you guys cruising at?
You know what? I didn't even watch. It was bumpy as heck yesterday, and I was just kind of kept my head out the window and getting this feel for the airplane. That's interesting. And I know we were at probably flying at 24 squared. Very docile in the landing. It was cool. You know, I want to try it on a smooth day so I can get a true feel for it, but I liked it a lot.
And I know when I talked to him at Janesville, he was kind of Skymaster crazy as well.
Yeah, well, there's no accounting for taste. the Skymaster always looked cool, but I don't know. I guess I've heard enough about that engine. Actually, the engine is the same as in the 20, right?
The IO360, and you know, they had their issues as well with overheating and that sort of thing. And there's a guy that's the president of one of the clubs out in Michigan. He's invited me out to go for a ride with him, and he actually comes here every once in a while. And he says, you know, it doesn't do anything great, but it's got a lot of, you know, it does a lot of things right. And you know, it's not the fastest plane. You know, I forgot where he told me he cruised. I have my notes at home. Yeah, you hear all sorts of stories from guys, but, you know, he liked the idea of having the two motors. He loved the centerline thrust. And, you know, some guys out there, they really did a nice job with their aircraft. And some are, you know, he says, you got to be real careful out there. He goes, there's so many little horror stories that he tells me about. And even like with these guys that I talked to with the Twin Comanches, one guy that I was in contact with, I couldn't believe all the ADs that he was going through that it has. And he goes, first of all, he goes, you do realize you can't get any parts for this plane. He goes, and you need this thing that was done and this retrofit and this and that. If it doesn't have it, he goes, just walk away because you'll never get it repaired. And it was just like, you know, it really scares the hell out of you. And I'm just like, yeah, like I said, it's just my own demon. I'm always thinking there's something greener on the other side. And
I don't know if that's what makes you move faster and you're just somewhat impulsive or if it's going to keep you from making a decision. Is what you got is good.
Yeah, what I got is good. And it's just, it's nice. Every time I step back in the Cirrus and when we went to Lambert, all of us, and you know, George was in the right seat and he was just saying, geez, he goes, I just really, really love the Avidyne. I said, really? You know, I mean, I'm always taking the other side. Maybe it's the traitor in me. And I'm like, you really do? And I was like, you know, you go on the internet, you punch it on, you'll find 100 people that tell you how much they hate it. And I'm like, what'd you think of the Garmin? And I think he flew the Garmin for quite a while. But I think there's a lot of layers on top of that. I think what he was just talking about what he loved about the Avidyne, he told me, is just, it's just a very simple one to use.
And people that fly the G1000, I've flown both, but because I learned with the Garmin 430 stack before the Avidyne was out, I don't know if it was before out, but before I really saw it, it was just a natural transition. So I prefer the Avidyne, but I understand that I'm speaking with a prejudiced view because that's what I learned on and that's kind of become rote to me and second nature.
Yeah, and that's what I learned on as well. I mean, before I joined you guys over at Leading Edge, I joined because of the Avidyne and the Archer that you guys have there. And, you know, it's just a newer aircraft. My wife and I, we were going around taking a look at schools, and that's what we liked about Leading Edge, is just that it had newer planes. And, you know, there was a particular flight school my wife and I, we went to, and she looked inside and she goes, "You're going to learn in this?" And, you know, she doesn't get it that it's, you know, just because 25 or 30 years old, it still flies. But I think when you look inside the cockpit and you see velour interior that looks like out of a 1985 Eldorado, you know, I think it kind of rubbed her the wrong way. And everybody that's listening, we all know these things fly. I mean, there's just...
Right,
there's,
but we also know that our non-aviation, non-pilot friends, you know, they're impacted a lot by appearance, and we are too to some extent.
No, exactly. I mean, my wife is one that always likes stuff that's newer, whatever the case may be. So
hopefully she doesn't feel that way about husbands.
No, I think I'm here to stay. And, you know, so, you know, when you go out and you get into something that's newer, I mean, it's nice. It's, you know, when friends come by, I mean, I think everybody just feels more comfortable. And I had a friend of mine, he goes, "I'm scared." He goes, "How do you get, what's his name to go with you?" I said, "It's got a parachute." I said, "You can talk people into that." I said, I show them the video. I'll forward it to them from YouTube. This is what, you know, this is what will happen. That's kind of the briefing that they get before they get in the plane. Like, this is how it will go down if something goes wrong. And they're like, "Oh yeah, that's okay."
You know, yeah, so. Actually, and I mentioned it last week. I think, you know, I took my family to go visit other family.
Right.
And, included my mother, who's, approaching her 90th birthday. And all week long, she's saying, "No, we're taking the airplane with the parachute, right?" Right, that was important.
Sure.
Yeah, so I understand. Just don't ever show them like a mid-air collision where the parachute doesn't do any good.
Well, like you said, if you're within the envelope and pull it correctly, I mean, it all works. And, and the other thing that I like about it too is the parachute aside, just, you know, getting back to the Cirrus and Copa, I just love the support group that you have on there. And every time that you have a question and you go online, and you're, you know, even if you don't even ask the question, you can probably search it out and find the answer that you're looking for. And if not, you know, people respond to you rather quickly. And, you know, I've met a few people on there that were very helpful with me.
Yeah. And, no, absolutely.
You know, and so I sit back and I say to myself, okay, where can I get that support group at? You know, and you know, you do have other clubs and, but you know, they just don't have the same numbers as they do with the Cirrus. And, but my disease is that I like everything. And, you know, we know the players, if we want to call them that are out there that own a hangar and they have 25 or 30 planes. And I would, and if money wasn't an object, that would be my disease. I would be that same type of person, I think, where I would have to have one of these and one of those. And, you know, even, the gentleman that you had on last week, you know, I went home, showed my wife the website. I was like, "What do you think of this Texan T6? And she loves it. You know, she just loves it. Because I told you, 40s on 4, which is what she loves about the Cirrus because of satellite radio.
Yeah.
And Turner Classic Movies. She'll watch that all day long. Those are the only two things that she watches and listens. And when she sees those old tail draggers, she loves them. And so I'm actually thinking maybe next month, you know, give those guys a call. And, you know, they got a couple of them. And I said, you know, we can fly side by side and do something like that. I thought would be kind of neat.
We got to arrange that.
Yeah, no, I think I'm going to do that. You know,
that's
so.
That's cool.
You know, we'll see how it works out, how work works out, and then if it's good, then I'll go do that. I'll have some fun with it.
Have you seen the Tecnam, TECNAM?
You know, that rings a bell. But I have to look it up again because I can't remember exactly what that was.
Yeah, it's interesting. I spent a little bit more time because I was contacted by someone putting together a financing type program on it.
Okay.
And, Tecnam, not Tecnam.com, although it takes you to those airplanes, it's Tecnam.net.
How do you spell it?
TECNAM. And what I really like about this that I'm thinking maybe something that a flying club could make good use of is they have a twin, but with two Rotax engines. So you're burning 10 gallons total for both engines. It's got a retrack on it. And it's, you know, it's not super fast. I think probably 130 knots, 140 knots. But for someone that wants to build time, you can get by darn cheap. And it looks like it has a wider cabin.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now. Yeah,
and you got a door in the back for your passengers, a door in the front for the pilot and co-pilot. And it's a four-place, and it looks really, really cool for its proper mission.
What's the cost on that?
And I think if you go with the glass version, it climbs toward $500,000. If you go with the steam gauge, it's probably, I don't know, $100,000 less, maybe $50,000, $60,000 less.
Yeah, the cockpit is wide. You know, I look at that and I say for the money, okay.
I understand. Where are you going to go?
You know, I mean, if you want to burn 10 gallons an hour in a twin, you can, you know, that Diamond Star is one that can do it as well, and you can probably get a good used one for half the price.
Good point.
You know, $250 to $300 or something
like
that.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right.
Depending on which engines you want. And they got some really cool videos on YouTube with them about with engine outs. A guy does it at 50 feet, 40 feet, 30 feet, 20, and 10. I don't know if you ever saw that at all or not. And it just keeps going. And that's a neat you know, that's a nice plane as well. I know you're always, I know you used to love flying the Diamond, so that's why I mentioned it.
I like flying anything.
Right.
Hey, I wanted to also ask you, you know, we saw the sequestration, start to impact things. And I had a question. I wasn't sure how that was happening because certainly the towers were still staffing positions. Yeah, someone's got to take a day off every other week, but it was really, you know, everything was 3 hours late. I'm wondering, was it kind of people slowing down, or do you think it was caused by the furloughs?
I don't know. It could be people slowing down.
Yeah. But they got it fixed, so who cares?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, you know, so it's yeah.
Actually, I'm going to just give me 1 second here. I heard something and this is only tangentially related. Let's see if it comes up. Oh, did it just go away? We'll see if we can get this going here. I had something, and well, let's just keep talking. I'll try and pull up because it was an interesting ATC pilot conversation. It's not new. Let me see if I can just do this. I had it all queued up, and now it's gone. Oh, well, I'm not going to take the time. Maybe I'll get it later.
No problem.
So any flying coming up this week?
No, like I said, I think Friday. I if I can sneak up during the midweek here, I'll do so. If not, my plans are to take Al Waterloo up to Duluth on Friday, because he's going to leave on Saturday to fly the Cirrus down to Chile. And it's just a question of what time we're going to leave. It's in the morning. I wasn't in the impression that he had to be there Friday, but he actually is not leaving until Saturday. So now that kind of makes it like the trip's almost going to 100%. Be a doable deal and happen just because I can leave at any time because, you know, depending on what's going on my end, you know, if nothing's going on, I can leave in the morning. If not, I'll leave in the afternoon with them. And I never been up there. I like to do a little dog and pony show at the factory real fast. Have you ever been up there?
I have. I was there on a day off, though, but they still took me through. It's quieter, so you could certainly hear everything.
Yeah.
There was nothing going on. They just took me each station. So it was still very, very cool.
And it's probably a mistake for me to go.
Because you'll buy one.
Well, you know,
or a mistake for who?
Yeah, a mistake for him. He's like, hey, look at this.
Yeah. I thought you meant something behind us. By the way, I don't know if I mentioned it, but we always like to give credit where credit is due, and our thanks to Signature Flight Support here at KPWK for making their large conference room with a beautiful view of the ramp available to us as nighttime sets. And it's before you got here, I was sitting down preparing, and I had a host of people that were coming in, more so than usual. And it one was a captain for Flexjets, and I had a wonderful conversation with this this woman who's been flying for them, loves her job. It was very uplifting. She just absolutely loves what she does for a living. And actually, it was kind of a small world. We decided there's only 1.5 to 2 degrees of separation in the pilot community. Because I mentioned that I'm also part of the group doing the Flying Club Scholarship, Ground Effect Advisors.
Right.
And she said, my son applied for that. She's from L.A., and she happens to be at Pelwaukee, her Papa Whiskey Kilo. And I mention it, and she says, yeah, her son's trying to start a flying club, and he applied for our scholarship.
The world gets smaller and smaller.
Yeah, it is. And so for those of you that are interested in starting a flying club, you only have two more days to get your scholarship application in. So head out to startaflyingclub.com. That's all the information is there. And we're going to close all the applications on the 30th. And then over the next 15 days, we're going to start narrowing it down and make our selection by June 1st. It's pretty cool. We've got probably close 120, 130 applications over 30 to 40 states we've seen coming in. So there's a lot of interest.
Man, how are you going to siphon through all that? It's going to be a lot of work.
Well, we've been doing it. We've already, every week we kind of go through and we start to rank them. And, you know, it's tough because a lot of people have the right philosophy. They may not have the right resources. Others maybe have the right resources, maybe not the right philosophy. So there, it's, we'd love it to be objective. You enter into the spreadsheet and they say the winner.
Yeah.
But we read each one. We detect the passion that each person has. And, again, what do they have for facilities? What kind of airport do they fly at? Do they have an airplane? Do they not have an airplane? Do they have support? Do they not have support? It's an interesting, very time-consuming process, but we're excited about it and can't wait to make the final selection in about a month's time.
And there's four of you that are working on it, right? You, Al,
yeah.
And then Todd?
Todd and Lewis.
Lewis, right.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. So startaflyingclub.com. You know, I mentioned, and you were talking about that Janesville flyout that we did, the multi-club flyout.
Right.
We had a person I think you met, Sam, and he's been a guest on our show. Actually, he was live in the studio a few months ago, and he was working on his instrument radio. I understand he's had some pretty good things happen in his life, and I'd like to go ahead, and if I can work this out, actually bring him on the show. And I think he's got some good news to share with us.
I gave him a ride in his first Cirrus.
Well, maybe that won't match up to that, but let's see here. I guess I should have had this queued up.
See if he's around.
I think he is. And we'll go there. And I apologize, everyone. I am just working the board here, working the phones. And hope everything, let's see, there we go. Let's see if we get this. Hopefully you hear. Can you hear it ring?
Oh, yeah, I can hear it.
All right.
You're getting good
at it. Hey.
Sam.
Yeah, how you guys doing?
Pretty good. How are you? I'm a little jealous.
Doing well.
Why are you jealous, Alex?
Yeah, because I think I know where you're going with all this.
Okay, so we understand that we've got some good things happening in your life as of late, Sam. And is the little birdie in my ear giving me correct information?
You bet it is. Well, as you probably have heard, because I've been more than aggressively yelling and excitement on the Twitter and the Facebook, I passed my instrument pilot check yesterday.
Oh, congratulations. Congrats. How long has that been in the works?
Well, I started it up here at the Winnebago Flying Club probably, you know, in December, and we got some real bad weather, so I was kind of put on hiatus for a bit. But, you know, sometimes you got to make, you know, lemonade out of those lemons you're given. I was laid off from work
a
couple months back, and I was like, you know, I'm going to take this time as an opportunity, and I'm just going to pound out this, you know, IFR ticket, and that's what I did. And the same week that I'm getting ready to take the check ride, I get informed that I have a job offer, and I'll be relocating to Madison, Wisconsin. So it's like everything's...
Whoops, sorry about that.
You know, everything's kind of piling together, so... Very cool stuff, but I'm just so beyond excited to get this instrument check right done. And Alec, you got to get that done. It's so worth it.
Oh, I know. I'm just like it's you know, I'm gonna try to take a little time off here sometime in May, and hopefully I can kind of do some things here. Like, you know, I took that trip with Al, came back, we did a couple more little longer flights and that sort of thing. But, you know, he's been a little busy lately. I've been preoccupied with some stuff that's been going on, and it just kind of fell by the wayside a little bit here. But I really got to get cracking and do what I mean.
Yeah.
I did go take my weekend course for the written. I have to, at least I got that out of the way, but I have to go take the test now as well. And, you know, and Al says, he goes, you know, I need a couple more, you know, a couple more days with you and a couple good long weekends to, you know, to hammer through some stuff. And he goes, and you'll be done. But I just, you know, just haven't got there yet. And, like I told him, I said, as far as the written goes, I think everybody knows it. I've told him so many times, I'll take it like right before I go for my check ride. That's just how bad I am. That's what I do with my private as well.
You know, I kind of felt the same way because I really only took the written 3 weeks ago, and I was just like, oh, I really hate taking that test, you know, but you got to do it. And, you know, I know Al's been a real big proponent of these, you know, kind of accelerated courses. You know, he went out to California and did that. He, you know, flew with you, like, you know, yeah, quite a bit, you know, and did that long trip. And while I didn't do that kind of method up at, you know, Winnebago flying with John Dorsey, we just did it, well, you know, kind of the same little route, you know, Oshkosh, Green Bay, Appleton, you know, a few other airports. But we did it sometimes 3-4 times a week. And we just flew. And being in that, you know, airplane all the time, you know, you're getting so used to the airplane, you're getting so used to the procedures, it just really helps it sink in real quickly. I'm a big supporter of that now.
Yeah, I
kind of wish it was, you know, we decided to take one long trip, you know, schedules and weather and all that didn't work out. But, you know, man, it was well worth it. Just to really buckle down and hit it hard.
Yeah, that's the way they do it. I was actually having a conversation with Al today. We had spoken a little bit, and I was telling them when I took my private, you know, I took a little longer probably than I would have anticipated or wanted, and it was a little different from what you just said. You know, you went out to the airport 3-4 times a week, and that's essentially the same thing as, you know, spending a week, you know, spending a lot your life with somebody for a week and, you know, taking a long trip, or whatever the case may be. But I told them, I said, you know, that really is the way to do it. Or before I started, I told him, I said, you know what? I want some marathon classes where I can sit there like a half a day with you or 8 hours in a day and, you know, not necessarily have to take a trip, but just go someplace far away and come back. And the reason for that is because, you know, you can get so much accomplished, let's say in a half a day, that maybe it would take me a month if I tried to do it the conventional way. And what I mean by conventional is, you know, everybody has a life. They have a family. They have a job. You go to the airport, you come out for an hour and a half, you go home, and this is when I was doing my private, and then you try to schedule something for next week, and then guess what? The weather wasn't good that day. So you cancel, and then you go back out the following week. And so, you know, and I just didn't want to do the IFR the same way, because, you step away from the plane for 2 weeks, and then you come back, and then you're trying to kind of figure out, okay, where was I? What am I doing? Okay, this is what we did, and you kind of like, you know, just go over procedures again, kind of refresh, as opposed to living it, eating it, sleeping it the way you did, going out 3-4 times a week. It's like you just get in the saddle and go.
Exactly. I couldn't agree more. And, you know, if somebody has an opportunity to do that, I would recommend it, you know, wholeheartedly. Even if they can, you know, take a, you know, Friday and Monday off and just do 4 days at a clip like that over a long weekend or something, it's going to accelerate and build that, you know, not just muscle memory, but build that mental capacity. Because that was the one thing I really learned about with the IFR flying, was you really have to open up your mental bandwidth. You know, you have to be able to multitask so quickly and figure out where you are in three-dimensional space, you know, much more rapidly than you do with a VFR ticket. And being able to hit those, you know, 3, 4, 5 days in a row where you're just going, it really helps with that, at least I thought. So I'm a big believer of just get going, get it done, you know, and don't try to drag it out over a long, you know, 2-3 month process. But if you have to, you know, it's going to take you more time, you know, not just calendar-wise, but actually hours-wise too, but
right,
just do it, you know, if you can do it, you know.
If you can, yeah. And you mentioned, you know, 2 or 3 months. I know a lot of people have put years instead of months on that.
Sure. No, I can understand that. And, you know, I had the, you know, the times, you know, just like in your private pilot, there's times where you go, I just can't do this. I just can't you know, get past this section. And that's where having a good, you know, CFI that can, you know, has been doing this for, you know, years and, can really kind of help you get over those hurdles and to say, you know, okay, well, we're going to take a break from doing this. You know, you're getting stuck on VRs or whatever. Let's shoot something else. Let's do something different. We'll come back to that and kind of work with you so you can, you know, take that time and think about it a little bit better, I guess.
What was the hardest thing for you in your IFR training?
You'll get a charge out of this. The acronyms.
Okay. It's an acronym?
Acronyms. My goodness. Oh. The FAA seems to have just this huge love of absolutely making an acronym out of everything. You know, you have your MDAs and, you know, VR, everything is an acronym. And I just, my brain doesn't work well with acronyms. So I see an acronym and I have to mentally read it out. And it, oh, that wasn't even flying. It was just book learning and the acronym part was the hardest part for me.
IDKWYTA.
Here we go.
I, that stands for I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I know. So I thought you, of all people, Mark, would think that was hilarious. But seriously, no, it was all acronyms. I actually got, you know, a couple little study guides that just have glossaries in the back only so I could just read through and study acronyms. But flying-wise, it's probably an ILS back course. Just, it, you know, it kind of played with my mind. It was different. It was, you know, you have to learn to ignore certain things and, you know, reverse sensing issues and stuff like that. And I think that was probably the hardest of all the, you know, types of approaches. But, you know, I learned on a six-pack, and we have a, Winnebago Flying Club has a 172L, with a Garmin, you know, 430W. And that 430W is just, I really got to the point, and actually my DTU was saying I was working the 432 fast, because he couldn't figure out where I was, you know, going all the time. It was like, oh, we're doing this and this and this. And he's like, just slow down and go real slow on the 430 because I want to see how you're entering it all. But, yeah, I love that, you know, system. The Garmin system just totally made sense to me. So I can, when you guys were talking about, you know, the transition into, you know, the 430s with the Avanine, just, you know, that would be a, you know, totally make sense to me too.
Yeah,
that would be a positive for you guys.
Actually, it was interesting, the transition from the 430 to the 650 was tougher for me because I needed my little buttons that were no longer there, the 650, of course, being the touch screen. And you can use the one knob to do the direct twos and the frequencies, but all of your other things, it's like, wait a minute, I want to go to nav page 4 or nav page 5. There is no such thing as that anymore, so... That was a
that would be interesting to learn how to do. I mean, it, to me, you know, I'm a systems guy, so once I get going and I have a kind of a flow, it's like boom, 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 I can just hit it up every single time. So transitioning to, you know, complete touchscreen would be like, ooh, that's kind of weird.
Yeah, that is.
But, you know, I mean, I have to say my DTE was super awesome. I walked in, you know, and then, you know, You see how, you know, pilots, you know, students walk in and they got tons of books and tons of stuff. I had the required documents that they needed for the airplane in my iPad. And that was it.
Yeah.
And he was totally cool with that. He is, you know, I was expecting, you know, my DP was 83, so I was expecting him to be kind of anti-technology. And, you know, he was absolutely excited about it and he, really made sure I knew how to use the iPad and how to, you know, really dive into all the features and where can I find things and, you know, making sure that I, you know, if I'm going to replace books and paper, make sure that, you know, you understand some of the drawbacks, you know, battery life and stuff like that. But he was really accepting of it and really loved how fast I could get information for him on it. So that was, I thought was also really cool.
Yeah, we had a guest here, I don't know, maybe a month ago. Oh, actually, no, this was probably in January now that I think about it. Al Carino. I don't know if you remember Al. He was also going for his instrument ride and got it. And he came to the oral all prepared with all the charts printed out and just lots of documents and things like that. And the DPE said, are you going to use these? He says, well, no, I got my iPad and I got all this. He goes, well, then don't bring them. We don't need that, right? If you're going to use the technology, which he was a big supporter of, then let's go ahead and really use it. So to your point, these DPEs are pretty good once they understand the power of just using the technology that's there for you at any age.
Yeah, that was great. And, you know, I felt that, you know, your guest a couple of weeks ago, a gentleman that Al flew with in California, you know, and he was complaining about his, you know, DPE and how frustrating it was, you know, and, you know, he should have shopped around a little better. But the one thing that I would recommend to anybody is definitely look around for a good DPE. The one I had was, you know, it reminded me of, this will sound funny, an 83-year-old Al Waterloo, because it was all about teaching with story and teaching with examples and real, you know, conversational, you know. So it wasn't a sit-down. You know, if you've seen this, you know, the King's video of them sitting down and getting kind of grilled with questions, it wasn't that way at all for me. It was, you know, almost like sitting down with, you know, in this case, my grandpa, and walking through, you know, what would a flight be? And he did hit every single question, you know, that, you know, you'd expect the DTE to, you know, ask for every single area, I should say. It was all kind of done in a story arc. It was all real smooth and, you know, just real friendly. You know, hey, do you want a soda? Let's get a soda. Let's chat, you know. And I think that's, you know, such a positive way to handle an exam because, you know, you as a student are always so pent up and scared and like, ooh, you know, I just spent, you know, thousands and thousands of dollars and, you know, 50, 100 hours or whatever getting ready for this. And it all hinges on here. And here, you know, walks in and he takes away all that fear and just, you're having a conversation. And I thought that was super cool of the way he handled that.
Yeah, it sounds like, although it would have been a pain if all of a sudden he said, you flunked.
Yeah.
Then, oh, okay. No, that sounds great. I'd actually like to meet this guy. It's we need more of those.
Yeah, he's a great guy.
So
I'd recommend him to anybody in Wisconsin to go, you know, go see Duffy. Go get a checkout from him because he's, you know, real laid back, and he'll work with you and kind of make sure that he'll push you and make sure you know your stuff, but at the same time, you know, try to remove some of that, you know, anxiety that a lot of people can have.
Yeah, yeah. So you mentioned not only did you get your instrument ticket, you got a job at the same time. Did you buy a lottery ticket? Because these things come in threes, you know.
Mm-hmm. You know, I probably should have, you know. Those were a couple of crazy days out there. But yeah, it's got time to pack up from little Mino, Wisconsin, and head to the big city of Madtown. And
so are you, does that
adventure
mean,
on Wednesday.
Does that mean you're going to start with Cap City Flyers, the flying club up there?
Right now I'm going to stick with Winnebago because they're about an hour from where I'm going to, you know, kind of be a traditional, it's a college town, so I'm going to be a college student. I'm going to go live with Ma for a bit, you know, while I look for a, you know, piece of property and whatnot to buy and kind of deal with it because it's all coming together real quick. The job offer came, you know, within a, you know, they wanted me to be on site within a week. So,
wow.
I'm kind of like scrambling to get everything ready. So, be at Cap City. There's also UW Flyers, Flying Club, excuse me, in Madison. You know, so there's options. You know, I haven't quite decided what's all going on, mainly because I haven't had time to figure that out yet. But, you know, the wonderful thing about Madison is there's a bunch of good choices, and I'm real excited to, you know, have that opportunity. They've got a great FBO in Wisconsin Aviation. They've got, you know, two good flying clubs, and, you know, they have a great airport restaurant. What can, yeah, you know,
exactly.
What can be better than that?
And we're up there all the time, especially now that Janesville's closed down or the restaurant is closed down. Madison's kind of choice number one for us to go to Pat O'Malley's Jet Room there.
Yeah, yeah, no, the Jet Room is fantastic. It took me some time to kind of get there. I love flying, you know, like I love flying at night. I have probably almost 10% to 20% of, not quite 20%, but over 10% of my hours are night.
And
the only reason, I love flying at night. Actually, I took my cousin and his mom and my uncle on two different flights up for their first flight was at night over a snow-covered Wisconsin last winter, and they just fell in love with it because it's so smooth up at night, and the snow on the ground, you can see forever, if it's a nice clear night, I love it. I absolutely love flying at night.
Yeah, I always did too, because that's how, when, to your point, what you just talked about during the winter, the moon would light up the snow, so it was like daytime. You could see the other airplanes. It was calm. And it wasn't until I got much older and people said, well, wait a minute, isn't that dangerous? Because now if the engine dies and you're in a single engine airplane, you can't see what you're going to hit. You can't navigate necessarily to the farmer's field that might be down there. But I agree.
Yeah, it's a little harder, but, what are the statistical chances of, having an engine issue? And to me, it's you talked with the Kings, it's about risk analysis.
Yep.
And, risk abatement. Okay, the engine's good. The airplane's good. I did a good old pre-flight. I made sure the fuel system's good. Maybe I'll do a long run-up. Just make sure everything's extra okay. During the winter, I pack a little, mini survival kind of bag, where I've got, extra, a little blanket, stuff like that. So, it's all about, I'm trying to do things that lower the risk. But it's so worth it going up at night, especially in the winter here. With the snow on the fields and maybe a full moon or something. It's just amazing to watch.
I agree, 100%. So, what's next?
Move. Start a new job. I actually think I'm going to take a break for the next month. I'm not going to do any flight training, but I'm still trying to get up in the air a couple times and just kind of enjoy it. Maybe actually use this IFR ticket that I have now to go somewhere and where the weather might not be the best, and try to get some actual, I have a little bit of actual, but not a ton. Mostly because, doing flight training in Wisconsin in the winter, you have ice to worry about. So, I think just do a little recreation flying.
It's
go fly for the fun of it. And so what's next? It's going to be the commercial. I'm definitely, as soon as I get a little bit higher, I'm just shy of 200 hours now. So I probably want to get about another 30 hours, under my belt. And the commercial next. And after that, I'm doing CFI. Because, people like my current CFI, John Dorsey, Tim, who's also a CFI here at Winnebago. I mean, they're both master CFIs, and they're both fantastic. And, somebody like Hal, with his excitement, I've got several other friends scattered across the country who are CFIs, and they're all CFIs because they want to be CFIs, not because they have to. And I've always had this desire to, really continue education and help people continue education. That's why I'm going back into higher ed, and my new role will be, with the University of Wisconsin system. And I'm really, really wanting to, bring that excitement and my passion to young new aviators, or to, even if it's just helping people out with, a biannual, or, helping a flying club out with, getting people checked out in their airplanes or something like that. That would be so cool for me. I really, really want to, get that CFI ticket eventually. And, commercial's next, baby. We'll do this thing.
Yeah. Well, I've been saying, for years that the commercial's next for me. And of course, for years I've said it because I haven't gotten it. And so I hope you're, if not more motivated than me, but you actually execute on the dream. That's a little thing that I've been disappointed with because I really do want it. I do want to get my CFI, but I don't know. I just haven't been disciplined enough to make it happen.
Well, you happen to be in a club that has access to aircraft with retractable. You happen to have some fantastic CFIs that can help you with that. So
it's the written.
Get out there and do it. Mark.
It's the written exam, man. I can't get motivated to go through a 100-question test.
That I can understand.
Yeah.
I'm horrible at self-study for, the FAA things. And I really think that I'm going to do, what Alec, you did, is just go to take that weekend class, at American Flyers or someplace like that. And
yeah, the nice thing about
immerse myself for a weekend and knock it out.
the nice thing about taking it over at Flyers was that you had the, you know, they give you the online course once you're done with it. So the class that you just got done taking over the weekend, it's online and you can just listen to it all over again. And,
yeah.
You know, and then all the additional videos that they have on top of it. So they put that together pretty well. So it's like, you know, you just don't take it and forget about it. You can actually go back to it. And one thing, even after when I went for my private and I, you know, I, even once I got my ticket, I actually went back over there just to, you know, spend one day out of the 3-day course. I just wanted to go back for, navigation and weather. And, yeah, come on by. You know, it's good. And,
oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So it was really nice. And, you know, I think that's how they operate. And, you know, I was like, okay, you know, and I'll come back for the instrument now as well. And, you know, it's a nice course that they put together.
I used the King tapes for, my instrument, and I thought it was great for me because I could play it back. I could do it when I'm on the exercise. You know, it worked well for me. So I'll probably go that route, but it's kind of each of us has our own way of best learning, right? And, mm-hmm. I can't do the Gleim books, which I know so many people love. I need someone to talk to me.
I can't do those either. I agree with you.
Yeah.
I never
yeah.
saw the King videos, but I could probably do that as well.
Again, John King makes me laugh. I've said that 100 times, and that makes it enjoyable.
His video for the check ride, for
yeah.
the private,
yeah.
was my check ride.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
The guy,
I was just like, wow,
this is pretty cool.
Just listen to all this.
So, Sam, I understand that you are ready to celebrate on a Sunday night, so we might be keeping you from your celebration.
Yeah, a friend came back into the area, and we're going to go and tip a couple back, and he's a fellow pilot, so he's instrument rated, so he knows the work and, you know, dedication that goes into that. So we're going to go and have a cocktail or two and enjoy a night.
Excellent. Well, I don't want to keep you from that. I do appreciate you taking the time to join us, and from all of us that know you, you know, we've been rooting for you, and congratulations on both fronts to getting the job and earning that all-important instrument ticket.
Congrats.
Yeah, I really appreciate that, guys. Thank you so much, and have a fantastic evening, and I'll lift one up for you guys as well. So take care, and both of you, you know, you work on your commercial, and Alec, you work on that instrument, and I'll come down there and raise glass with you as well.
Sounds cool.
Absolutely. Okay, buddy. Have a good evening. We'll talk to you later.
You too. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye. Well, that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm jealous.
I'm jealous. I'm not jealous. I'm happy for him. You know, if he got the commercial, I'd be jealous.
I got to get cracking.
You got to get cracking. That's what we need is this peer pressure to make it happen. Mm-hmm. You know, he was talking about that. I have something here I want to, let's see here. If I push this button here, let's see.
Yeah, you almost make me feel half guilty on the side.
I've got to be a little bit curious on this. Where in God's name are you going?
340, we're going to Tito Road, 601 Alpha Dota.
Can you hear that?
Yeah.
320 heading, would you agree with that?
Hey, you probably checking on 320 heading. You assigned us a 180 heading for 601 Alpha Dota.
Keep in mind, I gave you a 280 heading because most controllers would have to hold a gun to their head to have an arrival fly in the face of the departure. I'm on a light heading 340, sir.
We're in the turn to 340, 601 Alpha Dota.
1 Alpha Delta, turn left heading 280, sir.
280, 1 Alpha Delta, 601 Alpha Delta.
Sure, I should have double-checked your readback, but just be careful with that, okay?
601 Alpha Delta, we read back 180. You gave us 180 heading. We were rather surprised with that when we took the heading. I'm happy to call you later if you want to pull the tape.
Oh, it's not that. It's just the fact that you uttered the words, you were surprised at that. Generally, that means don't be quiet. We're a team together, and you got to admit, if they're departing runway 6 and you're heading directly at 6, you should at least be curious.
That makes sense. Talk to you later.
Buddy, no problem. There's no need to call you. This scared me. That's all.
All right. What do you think of that?
Traffic 12 o'clock and 3 in North.
What do you think of that?
It's nuts. I'm glad it wasn't me there.
Well, you know what's funny? I listened to the rest of it. And the controller did tell him 180, right? He was saying, no, I told you 280. I went back and listened to the rest of the tape. So, that's scary, you know, and to his point though, when he said, hey, if you were surprised to get that, then you probably should ask, which I agree with.
Right.
But, yeah, that's, pretty amazing. You know, when I, the guy gave him one that turned him directly into the departing aircraft. Oy vey.
Yeah. As you say.
As I say. So, you know what? Because, again, we're a little guestless, but we just had Sam on. That was great news. You know, I was talking to you earlier about the cutting the cost of flying, right? You know,
right.
Buying airplanes. The thing is, if you fly 100 hours a year, they say you probably should buy an airplane. It'll be less expensive and all this. But I have another thing that I think a lot of people do, but we got to more formalize it, and that is buddy flying. Did you ever do that where you start to fly with people and split the costs?
You know, no, I haven't really got too deep with that, really. You know, outside of the stuff that we do all together as a club, and we take, you know, 3-4 planes and 15 guys, 12 guys, whatever it is, you know, that's about the extent of it. I have thought about maybe getting together with, you know, a couple other people and splitting the cost of my per hour rate that I pay to fly my plane. And, I think that would be a real economical way, for three guys to get together. Four guys would be great, but weight and balance, it all depends if I could do it or not, but which is, might be highly unlikely depending where you want to go. But, for what, you know, my fixed costs are my fixed cost. And, you know, I kind of park that in the back of my head and I say to myself, well, what if I, you know, fixed cost aside and my hourly rate and I split that with somebody, you know, that would be relatively cheap between three people. I think people would probably like that. I think I would be able to get a couple guys together that would be like on a rotating basis that would like to go. And then maybe they don't feel so guilty in not being able to, you know, take off and land and that sort of thing, because it's not really costing them. It's probably costing them half of what it would cost.
Well, that's exactly right. And I feel like anytime I'm in an airplane, whether I'm in the back seat, the right seat, the left seat, doing the radios or just watching, I learn.
Right.
Right. And I have the same, I don't know if it's the same, but it's pretty close to the same thrill of flying. And so now if someone else is paying 50% of it, I could do it twice as much and pay the same.
Sure.
Right. Right?
Sure. And I think for me, it's a little bit different as the owner versus, renting an aircraft.
Yep.
Only because, like I said, you know, if you rent an aircraft and it's, you know, $165 an hour and you split that a couple different ways and, or three ways even. And, you know, my costs are, you know, like I said, fixed costs aside, I'll eat those because I pay that every month, whether I fly or not.
Exactly.
But I'm thinking about my hourly rate that I pay. If I split that with two other guys, I mean, this becomes really cheap now, because I mean, there's so many times I come out to the airport just to go tool around. And, you know, sometimes I have like this list that I go through with guys and just like, hey, what, I mean, I know I've called you before. It's like, hey, where are you at? And I'm so last minute.
Yeah.
And I'm just
like, can you be here in 30 seconds?
You want to go flying? And it's just, you know, like, well, I'm at work. I'm like, where are you at? I'm like, well, I'm on my way to the airport. And, you know, I just decided I'm going up and the plane's available and I'll go. And I think guys would probably go for that. And, you know, that's the only way I know of that I would think that it would work. And like I said, for me, it's a little bit different because the fixed cost I'm already eating. So my per hour rate is cheaper than, let's say, something else. And I think guys would probably, I never reached out to anybody to say, hey, what do you think? I'm sure if I did, I'm sure there'll be some people that would say, okay. And again, I ask myself, you know, is that detrimental to somebody else that's renting an aircraft, you know, because, you know, it would be cheaper to do a buddy system with me versus renting a plane from the club. But then I sit back and I say to myself, this might be somebody that goes up with me that hasn't been flying in such a long time anyway. And maybe it's something that sparks him to say, wow, you know what? I really should get back in the saddle again. And that sort of thing. And then maybe he does come out and he does start to fly again or get current, or maybe he was doing training and he stopped and, you know, he wants to get more involved again. You know, cause everybody's financial situation is different. Some, you know, with just the downturn of what's happened out here in recent years, and some people can't afford to go. And I kind of look up, you know, what can I do to kind of be a cheap way for guys to get together. And, you know, that's just a thought. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, well, and that's cool. It was interesting. I hadn't thought about this until a young gentleman that was flying at the same place I was, this was before the club, said, hey, you know, want to go flying? And I thought, okay, why go together? But then we just started this, and it became like a weekly event. And he's now lives in LA, and of course I'm here in Chicago, but when he comes back, we fly together, we split the costs, and I was so glad when he got his CFI, because then we didn't have to put on the parking brake with the engine running, and both of us get out of the airplane,
right,
so we could switch seats, because we could fly. So I want to give this gentleman a call, and catch him on a Sunday night. He's again in LA. And it's a friend of mine named Tim Rilko.
Yeah, Tim.
You know Timmy, right?
Yeah.
Hopefully he's around. I know he's been partying today. Day off.
Hey, Mark.
Ah, he knew it was me. Hey, Timmy, how are you?
Good, good.
Have you been listening? You know what we're talking about?
Yeah, I've been listening. You know, you guys had some interesting conversations about the getting the commercial ratings and, you know, sharing flying costs and all that fun stuff.
Yeah, and you and I started that.
It really came out of nothing. You know, it wasn't something that was planned. You know, it just kind of took off from there. And I think one of the good things that we did is rather than just say, hey, you know what, I want to just go fly to Madison and eat breakfast or eat lunch, we incorporated a lot of different training stuff. So we would go and shoot approaches, or we would go and do night landings and have competitions to see who could do what. And we still had fun, but we did more than just kind of fly from point A to point B, eat lunch, and fly back.
Exactly. And the other thing that you helped me with is, just as we were talking about passing the written, if you remember, we used to do the study buddy online, both preparing for our instrument written and the instrument check ride.
Right, right. And that's the other thing. It helps, you know, because those books, they can be confusing, and sometimes they give just a short explanation that you might not understand. So it's better to talk to somebody and see if they can help you out.
Yeah. But you've left me in the dust. You've gone out and you got your CFI, you've got your multi, you're doing all that, and when are you going to come back to Chicago?
Well, hopefully be back to Chicago in the next couple months. I am also working on my CFII, and I started studying for the written, and I heard you guys mention some different test prep ideas. One of them was at the American Flyers course, and of course there's the King Tape and the Gwine books. A new one that I tried for my first time, it's called Shepherd Air, and I believe it's $50, and you go online, they have the whole course online, and if you don't score above the 90%, they refund you your money, and it's a pretty interesting program, and I think it's going to work, so we'll see what happens.
All right, Shepherd Air, as in S-H-E-P-P-A-R-D?
Yeah, that sounds right. I think you just Google Shepherd Air Test Prep, and it should come right up.
All right. Let me actually, I have it here. S-H-E-P-P, as in Papa Papa, A-R-D, yep, as in Delta, A-I-R.com, Shepherd Air.
Yep.
Yeah, I found
it. That's it. And they do all of the stuff, you know, from APT, commercial pilot, CFI, CFII, and it's really a good way. The main thing with the written, like any of these things, is, you know, all of us hate sitting down and doing it and studying because it's just, for whatever reason, it's boring and it's time-consuming. But if you just lock yourself in the room and study for 2 or 3 days and knock it out and get it over with.
Yeah. Tim, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can. I'm sorry. I all of a sudden got quiet. So you're going for your double eye. Is there an ATP in your future too? What's kind of the path that you're taking?
You know what? I'm going to try to go for the ATP as well. And I think right now the short-term goal is obviously the CFI, and then teach for about, you know, I still need another, I don't know what it is, 600-700 hours to get close for the ATP requirements. So that's a little bit ways away, but it's definitely a long-term goal. You can never stop learning, so you just keep going and then see what happens. But for now, you know, I enjoy teaching and doing the ratings and just keep plugging along.
And I know you do other things in your life. Matter of fact, you have an MBA, right?
Yeah, I have an MBA in management, and that was a good experience. I'm still looking for that perfect job where I can, you know, combine, you know, using an MBA and some leadership stuff with the love of aviation. I know Al Waterloo's kind of in the same boat sometimes too, but, you know, maybe one day you'll find it, but right now I haven't.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's pretty cool. And so now that you're out in L.A. and we're here in Chicago, have I been replaced? in terms of flying buddy?
not really. You know, that's a, you know, I really haven't found anyone out here. You know, I've rented a plane a few times. I do have a couple friends that are partners, part owners of a Mooney, and they're both retired, and they go up and fly, but it's not all that frequent. And so it's, you know, people are busy out here. They kind of do their own thing. So it's a little different than Chicago. I haven't been doing as much flying, although I will say there are some great, neat little airports out here in California that are definitely worth it. You know, I think Alex flew out this way, but I don't know if you guys made it into California, but that was definitely a great trip. You know, and the Cirrus heading out west is just such great flying to do.
That was on the list, actually. The only thing was we had to burn. We spent two nights, actually, in Albuquerque just because the weather was so bad. It was so windy, and so it just kind of cut the trip a little shorter, because the idea was once we got to Arizona and we spent the night over there, and, you know, the other idea was to go land at LAX and then head back. But, yeah, it didn't happen, and I was watching these videos that Al put up when he went out there with Jake. And, yeah, it's neat. I'd love to do some flying out there, but and, you know, it'll happen in the future at some point in time. But, yeah, the sad part about it was is that you made it all the way from, you know, you make it all the way from Chicago to the West Coast, and you're just like there. And it's just one more flight. It's another few hours. And, you know, it just didn't happen. If we didn't burn the 2 days, it would have worked out perfect. But, you know, we had to get, you know, work our way back. My wife says, just make sure you're home by Christmas. And, and with Al, I was just like, Christmas isn't soon enough. You know, you got the show. So, you know, we made it back by Saturday. Coming back was fast, though. I mean, all the way from Arizona to downtown Kansas City in one day. And that was a lot of flying, I think about 8.5 hours in the air. And, you know, could we have made it all the way to Chicago? Yeah, you could have. But it was already 10:30 at night, so we just spent the night over there. But, you know, had you left a few hours earlier, yeah, you probably could have made it all the way there, which really was a lot of flying, but I enjoyed it.
Yeah, but a lot of flying, it turns out not to be a lot of issue, right? I mean, we all say, cool, I got to fly a lot. You don't get tired until you get out of the plane.
Yeah, it was nice. I really enjoyed it. And again, like I said, looking at Al landing at some of these airports, you know, he would, you know, put it on, what's that?
Spark reel.
And he goes, guess where I'm at? And so I just start looking at runways up and down the coast, and I'm looking on WingX so I can get the top of, you know, the top of it. And, you know, just looking like, oh, I think you're here. And, now I was just kind of ruining it all the time, saying, this is where you're at. You know, so, and then I stopped doing that because it was being a pain, I think.
Yeah. So, Tim, what's your favorite airport out in California?
You know what? I'm out at Camarillo a lot. I fly out of Torrance regularly. That's where the Mooney is based. Catalina is a very cool airport. I've only been there once, but it's very tricky, but it's a neat airport. Definitely worth going to check out if you make it out to the West Coast. Santa Monica Airport, I like. I've visited there in the car. I actually haven't flown into there. They charge landing fees, I think, too. But there's just so many neat little airports. There's a couple, you know, up north in the Bay Area that are right on the water that I'd like to fly into at some point. You could just spend, you know, you could spend 4 or 5 days just flying up and down the coast and just hitting a bunch of different airports, which to me would be a great trip.
All those you mentioned, I don't think I've been to that many airports in Illinois in your short time that you've been in L.A.
Well, that's because you guys fly north, go right to Wisconsin.
Well, not always. I'm going south too, but you add them all up, and you just named a bunch. And I got to believe that the approaches, maybe you've come in over the water, we've got to be pretty special.
Yeah, and I haven't done, you know, what's funny is VFR out here a lot, you know, so you don't, you know, 70, 80 degrees in Southern California pretty much year round.
Sounds pretty tough.
It's not the same like, you know, flying into Kenosha and it's 15 degrees outside and the ceilings are out, you know, 2,000 feet or whatever.
Yeah, it sounds really tough, Tim. I feel really bad for you.
I'm crying. Hey, what kind of Mooney is that you fly out there anyway?
It's an older Mooney. It's the M20J, I believe.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, there's a lot of J's out there.
Yeah. It's a fast, you know, it's fast. It's just great. It's a great airplane. You know, I think you're burning right around 9.5 gallons an hour.
And that's the one. That's 200 horsepower, isn't it? Is that 200 or or is it one?
I think it's 200. It's
I think it's...
Go ahead, Tim.
I believe it's right at 200.
Yeah, there was a lot of different... I have very little experience in Mooney, but between the rocket and the missile, and they had the 180 horse, and they had the 200 horse. Actually, a little bit of trivia. Do you know why it was the Mooney 201?
Around 201 miles an hour.
Yeah, you knew that one. I told you probably before.
No, I knew that one. Oh, it's okay. The same with the 231, with the turbo.
Well, at least this is what I was told. Maybe you Mooney people out there can tweet me if I'm wrong. Why the fin leans forward like that?
That one you told me.
All right. Tim, do you know?
No idea.
At least I was told that was when you were in the landing configuration, so in a flare, the nose was high, and so the rudder was perpendicular, so you'd get the most effectiveness in the flare with a design like that. I buy off on that. It makes sense to me.
Makes sense.
So, Tim, I want to talk. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead. What were you going
to say? I was going to talk about a trip you and I took to Lake Lawn, Delavan. You remember that when we were
that when the sunglasses were still on the center line?
It's exactly right. So, tell us the story if you remember it.
We would go up there and shoot some approaches, come in and land. And I think in those days, I was still just doing my instrument rating, or I finished it working on my commercial, so we would land, taxi back, and then we would, right before we took off again, I would get out, we would switch seats, and then off we would go. And when we got out of the plane, you dropped your sunglasses right there on the center line, we took off and went back to Kalwaukee, and then you realized, oh, I forgot my sunglasses. And then when you went back, I think it was the next day, they were still sitting there waiting for you right on the center line, which, pretty amazing.
Yeah, it was on the taxiway center line, and in 24 hours, and there were new aircraft on the ramp, no one had crushed my very favorite Ray-Bans that were from the 70s. It had gone a full day, and no one had been on the center line. How is that possible?
They can't taxi.
Exactly. Or they saw it. Maybe you'll give them the benefit of the doubt. Yeah, so I always, and I remember I couldn't go back at night because they didn't have lights, so I went back the next day, and it cost me $142 based on rental time and all of that, so they've always been my 142 pair of Ray-Bans.
And Lake Lawn, it's tight. There's not a lot of room down there, so, I remember there's people that have, clipped the fence here, or there's not a lot of room, so you really gotta be on that center line, so it's kind of interesting that nobody made it.
Well, and that's the other thing too that's interesting about where we used to fly when we went there, because now, after several complaints from people like me, because if you were just off the taxi center line as you came on to 36, your wing, if you were low wing, was above the fence to the outside, and when the fence post came up, it would pop the bottom of your wing. And that happened to me. It's happened to a lot of people. Matter of fact, I know someone in Mooney, it's happened twice. Or no, the Mooney I know was once. I talked to the repair guy, and he said, one plane was even twice. Now, how do you do it a second time? I don't know. So if you go to, I think, AirNav now, and you go to that, it says low wing airplane, caution, close fence, or something like that. So we're getting slow change, slow but sure.
And one of the other things I was going to mention, Mike, before we get too far off the topic, was the buddy flying going up. One of the great things for me is that it allowed me to get the opportunity to fly different airplanes that I wouldn't otherwise have the chance to fly. And, when I flew with you, I've only flew an Archer, and that was it, and then you had the opportunity to get into a Cirrus, and then I got to fly that with you, so I got into the Cirrus, and then got some other chances to fly in an Arrow and a Cessna 310, and that was all from just you know, flying with friends or people that you met at the airport. And if you're just going to go and rent every day by yourself, kind of miss out on those opportunities, I think.
That's a great point. As a matter of fact, when you come back, I want to take you up in the Bonanza. It's a lot of fun. So, Tim, when are you going to be buying an airplane, you and Alex?
Yeah, me and Alex. I would love to buy it. I told Alex I love those Lance Airs.
Oh, the turbines, yeah. The PT-6 ones?
Yeah, well, any of them. I mean, they're just, they're amazing. They're amazing planes. And I mean, it's a lot. You get a lot of it. You get a lot of airplane, you know?
And do you have the same disease I do where you go to the controller, you pick the tail number, and then you go to the flight over and you see how fast some of these guys are cruising?
I mean, it's crazy. They got kind of a reputation of being maybe too much airplane, a little bit dangerous because of the speeds, and they fly them up in the flight levels, you know, pretty high. But, you know, I think that's where training comes in and stuff. But the planes and the controller, believe it or not, I'm surprised that you're getting the performance of planes that are over $1 million, and you can get a used one for, you know, I don't know, you probably see them in there for $250, $350, somewhere in there, $400,000, right?
Yeah, no, they're in that price range. I mean, and you got the different models. I mean, you have the 4P, the pressurized version, and like you said, you can get up here into flight levels, and these guys are consistently, looks like they're all flying, you know, 250 lats plus, and I mean, you get like the one Mark was talking about, the PT-6. I mean, you see some of these guys really zoom when they're up there. I mean, I think I've seen some stuff on FlightAware where these guys are, you know, they're past 300.
Yeah, that is so cool.
Yeah, and it's just like, wow. I mean, and that's like, you know, those are a bit more, obviously, you know, now I think, you know, you tick into the $400,000 range when you get into that. But, you know, if you're honest with yourself and you say four seats is all I need, as opposed to, let's say, like a Piper Meridian that we talked about that, you know, it's going to cost you somewhere deep in the sixes. And still, you know, you're probably going to cruise around 260 with that. That plane still beats it out speed-wise. And, you know, what those fuel burns are in that one, I don't know. I just never really got that deep into it. But it's pretty, yeah, they're impressive.
Did you,
they're very impressive. And, you know, the other thing, too, is, you know, this buddy flying thing, it can lead into something like, you know, buying a plane and getting into a partnership with someone, you know, to keep the cost down, as long as you guys get, you know, agree on who's going to get the plane when, which seems to be the biggest argument, you know, between the partnerships. But other than that, it's a great way to get into the Lance Air or the Piper Meridian, and, you know, you just get a lot more for your money.
I don't know if you guys saw Diamond announce their DA-50, which they actually showed a prototype a few years back at Oshkosh, but they're going to put a PT-6 in it.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, yeah. And I thought it was a very cool plane when they introduced it as a piston, which would have been, I think they were planning a 350 horse in it. So now they're talking about putting a PT-6, and it was in the news this week. And I want to own an airplane with a PT-6. That's all I got to say. That's,
I mean, that fills a nice void in the certified category.
Yeah.
You know, something like that. The one interesting thing that I saw when Tim was talking about the Lance Air, I saw some YouTube videos. I don't know what that autopilot's called, but, you know, they're all done like an experimental. I don't know if it's called the BPN 300 or 400 or something like that. But I don't know if you saw these, but guys have them in their Lance Airs. You know, you just press a button, and it just bleeds off all the speed, pitches you, takes you right to the end of the runway. We'll do, you know, circles and take you down, and, you know, it just draws pictures, you know, of just of that whole deal. And it was really neat.
Huh, I'll have to look at that.
Yeah, I don't know the name for it. I know when we went to St. Louis and George in the right seat, he knew of it, and we had spoken about it. And, you know, I mean, if you put it in your Cirrus now, you got to say it's experimental because it's not, you know, approved by the FAA. And that sort of thing. But I'm just, you know, for as far as safety goes, you know, if somebody wanted a parachute and doesn't have a parachute, but you have that option, I mean, it was really cool.
It sounds it. You know, we were just talking about cutting the cost. Did you guys see that Diamond Share program?
I heard you guys talk about it last time, and I don't know if I was able to find it. Well, I think I did find it online, but I didn't get too deep into it. But I just didn't know if that was, I didn't know all the particulars about if that would be for some up my alley or something.
Tim, did you see that?
I haven't heard anything about it. Is that similar to the program that you did with the Sirius before?
No,
it's
a little bit different. And essentially, one person buys an airplane, and then they sign people up to fly their airplane. Essentially, they commit to paying $1,000 a month and then variable cost to fly the airplane up to 100 hours over the next 12 months. And I think, and I might be wrong on this piece, I think it's either 1 year renewable or 2 years. I think it's a 1 year renewable they can up again. All of the maintenance is covered, all of the insurance, everything is covered, warranty obviously because it's a brand new airplane. And so you have these other people that are essentially paying off your first couple of years of costs. And there's right. no equity for the people that are paying. It's only for the owners. So that's where it differs from a fractional program. And, you know, there's obviously, it is what it is, and there's no magic bullet here, but I thought it was extremely interesting. And we did something like that in our flying club a few years back to acquire Cirrus. It kind of fell through at the last minute, but it was the same concept. And I think you get the right people, it'll work. You just got to come up with someone that's willing to buy a $400,000 airplane.
All right, and is that and that's for a new aircraft, right?
Yeah, so you're under warranty. That's for a new DA-40 XLT or XLS. And again, it was $1,000 plus, I'm forgetting what the hourly is, but it's again, it's essentially the variable cost. And they're covering the maintenance because of the warranty, and they're covering the insurance in that too.
Yeah.
I'm kind of wondering what happens 3 and 4 years out. Eventually it becomes yours and you're out of warranty, but it sounded like a great program, and I think flying clubs could.
I was going to say, I wonder if that's something that, you know, flying clubs could do to acquire aircraft, and essentially the club owns the plane, and then its members pay that rate, the monthly bill and the rate, but, you know, to fly it, and then it becomes, and then it's the club.
Yeah. I mean, you have to have named users, so you can't like open it up for everyone. That's, I would think, an insurance, not loophole, but something you need to get around. So you can't have like 80 people fly it, but you can have 4 or 5 people. So maybe you get a couple of them. Right? You find a couple of guys and now you got 8 to 10 people flying the airplane, 2 airplanes. Uh-huh. It might scale.
I'm sure you can still structure something some way, somehow. I mean, think about it. I mean, everybody that has it in the rental fleet's the owner now anyway, and right. they put it out to the fleet, and there's
got. But you got to pay for the insurance,
yeah,
right. And with an open policy rather than a named user policy, it's just going to be more expensive. So I don't know if Diamond's going to pick that up or what. Well, I think it's worth looking into. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
So
great, another choice.
What's that? Yeah, another choice. Well, you got the Diamond, and then there was something else. I'm trying to remember the name of it, but I talked to a gentleman that's got it's almost like a VC firm, it sounded like, and they basically, people contribute to help you buy an airplane, and then they get a return on their investment, a percentage gain, and it's just combining a lot of people investing in a fund that goes out and buys airplanes for like clubs, and they pay it back. So I think there's a lot of push, a lot of momentum around new ways to uplift not only aviation. I'm sure these things work elsewhere, but at least as far as we're concerned in the GA community, and I think it's great. I just want to buy something new.
Well, and you know, we're talking about the new market, but the new airplanes, but there's a lot of good values in the used airplane market right now too. And a lot of planes where you can, you know, pick something up and then kind of upgrade if you want the glass or if you want the steam gauges. There's a lot of good, I think that there's a lot of good deals out there.
Oh, I think you hit it right on the head. I mean, there's...
And I know where you're going with this, Alex. Yeah, tell them about the one you're looking at.
Which one are we talking about here?
The G1 or something?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've talked about that. The thing with Cirrus is they had built so many planes over the last 10 years. I'm not going to say they're their own worst enemy, but what happened was you have so many SR-22s out there that you know, if it comes time to the point where you have one, you have to sell one. I mean, you know, it's just the competition is just so heavy. And, you know, I talked about this with Mark, and it's just like, you know, you can really go out there and you can buy an SR22 G1 version if you don't want to have the TKS. And, you know, there's one controller for like $149,000, and, you know, you can probably get it for $140,000. I'm just guessing here. It's got 50 hours in the motor. And, you know, you really can take it, spend $25,000 in it, you know, if you got a couple guys together, and, you know, maybe just put an, you know, it's got a six pack, but maybe just put an Aspen in there if you just want to have a little glass, and, you know, take it up to Midwest Refinishing up there in Minnesota. And if you go to their website, they got these G1s that they paint them, and they make them look like G5s. And it's really nice. I know a friend that has an SR20 that's actually getting his whole interior all redone, like brand new, for about $9,000, I think.
Wow.
Is what it is.
Wow.
You can really do it. Now you sit there, and I don't know what a paint job costs on a Cirrus. I don't know if you know, Mark, but
I don't.
So I never really looked into that, but my feeling is I think for $25,000 is just a guess. And, you know, if you didn't do anything with the glass, and did interior and paint, and I'm just like, wow, for $165,000, you have something that looks brand new. And, you know, and it's neat. And, you know, there's some other different things there between the options. Like if somebody's got 6-point mount versus a 4-point mount.
Right, right.
And,
yeah.
You know, I read stuff on Copa where guys would be like, we really couldn't tell the difference between the two. And their comment was always the same. If you would have saw what I was flying prior to the Cirrus, they said, you know, it doesn't matter to us. And, we're going to actually take our plane in June, I think, for prop balancing, and that sort of thing. And, you know, it really is, you know, those guys do a really nice job. They actually painted the wheel pants on our plane.
This in Hibbing, Minnesota? Is that the place?
I don't know. I know it's up in Minnesota. I just know their website. I'm not sure what suburb it is. I know we had sent it out to them. But they do some pretty impressive stuff and customize some things. And, if you want those empty props, four-bladed props, I mean, it's pretty cool, you know, right. And, you know, they'll do the flat black, just like the brand new ones. And, you know, it's neat. So your wheels start turning, you know, and it's neat. What I like about the G1 from what I saw in Hangar 6, I love the mechanism that they use for the latch for the door, because they're the pins versus closing like a regular car door.
I know, but I had more door pops on the G2. Or no, yeah, it was a G1 or G2. It was a 2003, I think, when they changed the door. Okay. So I know what you're talking about. I had more problems with the door then than I do now.
Okay.
But go ahead.
But is that the one with the pins?
Yes.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Where you have to go past and it locks in and it comes back. It's got the little lever rather than the button.
Yeah, it's got a little lever versus the button.
Yeah, I had a lot of people had problems with the doors back then, but from a theory perspective, I agree with you. It makes a lot more sense than what you have now, but they changed this one, I don't know, for simplicity or because the door is a better design.
I should probably look that up on Copa.
Yeah.
Just to see.
Let us know for next week.
Yeah. And see what it is. I gotta check that out because I was curious because, and useful load will be a little bit more on that plane. Because you don't have the TKS. And again, if you're just being honest with yourself, like, you know, I'm not really going to be in the junk. You know, out there when the ice is there. I mean, you shouldn't be anyway. You know, it's not known ice, but,
right.
You know, it's, you know, I think there are good deals to be had out there because with the new Cirrus, there's no joke. You can see what they are new. You can see what they are 2 years old when you look them up. And I think they lose like $10,000 a month is what it looks like to me. You know, and that's just, you know, do you want to play that game? Do you want to be in there? And, you know, when we bought ours, you know, the market was down and, you know, I thought we saved a considerable amount of money buying something that was, I think it was 2 years and 4 months old. We had 8 months left of the factory warranty.
Right,
still.
I remember that.
And, you know, I you see the base price of the Cirrus when you go online, but I mean, that's, come on. I mean, but once you start adding everything, wow, that's $40,000. Wow, that's $25,000. And then you price it all out and it's $440,000, for the thing. Or whatever it was, you know. I don't know if you had every single option on it, but I think it was the right time when we did it. And you know, but like Tim says, that used market, there is a lot of things out there that you can do. And again, and every airplane has it. you know, depending what model you want. I mean, you know, some people, if they need a turbo, you know, they'll run to that, if you want to do a little bit extra engine management, you go to that Mooney, when you were talking about the 201, how fast it goes, you know,
yep.
201 miles an hour, the 231 was the same thing. And that was like an economical turbo that you can buy out there for, you know, $65,000 to $85,000, you know, but again, you do a little bit more management on the pilot end, but, you know, or, you know, do you want to spend, you know, $265,000 on the Cirrus Turbo, which is probably the lowest end that you can probably find out there in the used market, and it goes up from there.
But I'm not a big fan of turbo. What about you, Tim?
You know, I haven't had too much experience with turbo aircraft, but you know, my feeling on the buying the brand new plane with every option is I'd rather have somebody else take the hit and on the depreciation and pick one up a couple of years old and just have a good mechanic check it over and get something with the warranty and go from there, because like I said, it's a substantial amount of difference in the pricing. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. You can tell you have an MBA. Always looking at things financial. I'm driven by emotion with airplanes. I know we all are to some extent, but I don't know. I would love a new Cirrus, a G5, but I'm dreaming at that point.
No, Alex, I know you're looking at other stuff. You're thinking of staying with the Cirrus and going to the SR-22, or looking at something totally different, or just
no?
Not sure?
I like I told Mark in the beginning of the show, it's like my wife kind of made up the decision. You know, I told her, you know, we got to go burn some gas in this one guy's plane, and she's just like, "What are you looking for?" She's like, "I really like this thing." And,
She also liked an Aztec because of the twin engine and all that.
Yeah, yeah, she did like that. She never went for a ride in that. But, when my wife and I, we flew down to, I think we were in Kentucky. I'm trying to think, not Lexington.
Louisville?
No, it was Lexington. It wasn't. Okay. We flew over Louisville. No, it was Lexington we were at. And there was an Aztec that pulled in, was getting some gas, and, I told my wife, I said, there's the Aztec. And she's like, wow. She goes, that's big. You know, cause it does have a big ramp presence. And when yeah. I went to go rent one, a little while back, and, you know, I probably had about an hour and a half time in it. And when I pulled up to the flight school that had it, I was like, wow. I was like, that thing is huge. I mean, you know, for me, I was just,
always called it bulbous.
Yeah, and it's like a fish thing, but
the Aztruck.
Yeah, and the Aztruck, right? And so then I started, you know, the whole process started all over again, and just, you know, reading about it, and guys, friends sending me stuff up about it, and you know, and then what you get discouraged about is the fuel burns on those things. I mean, it's just, you know, they're pretty, you know. I mean, I guess the deal is, you know, if you can afford to do so and pay it off and not have a mortgage on it, then which would be the idea, and then you know, you're just, you know, paying for your, you know, your variable costs, as you say, you know, you hanger it yourself, you know, you're paying for the gain. You know, the gas doesn't seem as bad anymore because you don't have these other costs that are associated with, let's say, a newer plane where you have a note on it, so to speak. And, you know, because you can pick them up fairly cheap. But again, they're all over the map too. I mean, you can find them $50,000, you can find them $250,000, you know, depending on the condition. The motors, you know, what they look like. And again, you know, you're dealing with like we said, an older plane again. And yeah. I mean, like yeah. The Bonanza, I mean, that thing is so clean. I mean, it's not even funny. It's like it just came off the showroom floor. And, you know, it's just a really, really nice plane. Yeah, it's the original interior and everything like that, but it looks like the day it probably rolled out of the place.
Yeah, no, it was well taken care of. Yeah. Hey, Tim, are you going to get your, MEI? You mentioned getting the double eyes, the MEI in the future.
You know what? I would love to do it, but I just the opportunities to fly a twin engine plane aren't really around as much, and the chances of getting some, you know, some students, people that want to go and get the rating, I don't know what the market is there.
Yeah, and
at some point, you know, at some point, I guess it's good to have and go and fly. You know, if back to Chicago and fly with some friends that have their own twin engine plane, you know, then it's kind of neat to keep progressing and get more ratings and always learning from a standpoint of making a living teaching in a twin. Kind of difficult right now. So I don't know if the cost is worth it, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely.
So, Tim, you know, one thing you and I haven't talked much about, but if Al were here, I know he'd want to ask you about your philosophy on teaching and the changes we need to make, if you believe that we need to make, and how we train student pilots today. Do you have some thoughts on any paradigm shift or things that have to be done in a different way to be more effective and to really pull in the youth of today's world?
Well, I think that there's this generation gap, you know, difference in the way people taught private pilots in, you know, the 70s and 80s versus the way they teach them now. And I think we need to maybe get away from there's only one way to do things and everybody learns the same. And I think that's not necessarily the case. You know, different people learn different ways, and it's, you know, the job of the instructor to kind of figure out how their student learns best and then to adapt to the student to help them learn all the information. And then throwing another wrench into this mix is this crazy thing called technology and iPads and glass cockpits and all this stuff that's kind of gone to a information overload. And getting someone in there and, you know, showing them how the new stuff works and how this technology works, and not overwhelming them to the point that they get so discouraged because it's like, you know, it could be overwhelming. So, and I think that's one of the good things that, you know, Al Waterloo really, really focuses on in teaching is explaining why we do things, taking things a step further and really breaking down, every part of the different things as to why you need to do it and making sure the student understands.
Yeah, no, that's great. Now it's a matter of how do you make that shift. And I think what I'm seeing is people like you and Al, and somehow I feel like I'm going to piss off the older CFIs that I respect so much. But as the changing of the guard happens, if you will, in terms of the younger people flying, I think the younger CFIs are coming too, and I think they get it. I hope they do, at least.
Yeah, I think so. I think the main thing is like, you know, even though I'm a CFI, I don't know everything. There's a lot of, you know, I don't know a lot of stuff, but I'm still always trying to learn, and it's okay if some, you know, student asks something and you don't know the answer, you go up, find it, and you go from there. But I think that the main thing is just adapting, you know, your teaching style to the needs. To the needs of your students, and I don't think, you know, there's a lot of guys with a lot of flight hours that are great at doing that. I can just, you know, there's some great instructors in the club with a lot of flying time, and they've made a living out of doing that. So, you know, I think that's just the most important thing to continue is to just make sure that you're adapting the needs to your student, and then just focusing on some of the technology stuff and how it can assist you, but why you still need to know the basics, and you know, and you have to find that fine line to combine the two.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Well, Tim, I you know, appreciate your being available. I know you had some things going on today, but you got to get ready for. Actually, you're probably off tomorrow now that I think about it. But I'm not going to feel too bad because I think our audience benefited just from hearing your thoughts on that. So I appreciate you taking the time. And,
no problem. Thanks for having me. It's always good to chat with you guys. Alex, hopefully I'll see you soon and we'll do some flying.
Yeah, nice talking to you as well.
All right, Tim. Thanks so much. Have a great, great day.
Have a good night, guys.
You too. See you later. Bye. Always like talking to Tim.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think our studio audience liked it as well.
Hey, quick question here for you. You're getting really good at that thing.
Yeah, I'm getting it. I had applause. Now let's see if they, how about this?
I like that even better.
I didn't do my Sunday night chuckle. I would have laughed.
That's what I was about to ask you.
Oh yeah?
I actually have something here.
You have a joke?
I have a joke.
You know what? Tonight, Sunday night chuckle is yours.
I figure since you're in Al's seat.
Yeah.
And I'm in your
this
seat.
This is a very, you know what? I have to say, It is tough to keep focused and making sure levels are right and make sure nothing's timing out and moving this and moving that. I have a whole new respect for him.
It's like you're flying to Bonanza with all the switches.
I know, but then you got to ultimately aviate, navigate, and then communicate.
Well, I'll tell you this joke that I know that I have here, and you know, I'll try not to screw it up. But you know, anyway, So the story goes like this. After a particularly lousy landing made from the right seat of a commercial airliner, the first officer heard the captain announce, "Ladies and gentlemen, let's just call it ABC Airlines, wishes to apologize for the rough landing provided today by our first officer." Some months later, the same crew was together, and sure enough, that captain made even a worse one, okay? And the first officer immediately jumped on the intercom announcing, "Ladies and gentlemen, ABC Airlines wishes to apologize for the rough landing provided today by our captain." Now, the captain looked over at his first officer and wasn't happy about it. It was pretty upsetting. He goes, "What did you say that for?" He goes, "Remember a couple months back when you did that to me?" The first officer replied, and he goes, "Now we're even." And the captain says, he goes, "But I never keep the mic." So I tried my hand at it. So that's what it was. Never keep the mic. So,
yeah.
You know.
I hate to tell you this, but I used that one before.
Oh, you did? Oh, I don't know.
But I know. You never, that was this one show that you missed.
Was it?
No, it must have been. But that, no, it's a good joke.
I told you this one last week. What do you call a pregnant flight attendant?
No, you didn't tell me this one.
Pilot error.
I kind of like that. That's like the, after a particularly bumpy landing, they said, that got on, the flight attendant said, "Well, it wasn't the pilot's fault, wasn't the co-pilot's fault, wasn't the flight engineer's fault, it was the asphalt."
I like it. I like it.
Oh, okay.
That's more up my alley. I think you're doing this better than Al does.
I think I have a new job. Oh, my goodness. Well, here's another one. I want to see what this is. Yeah.
Oh, that's good, too.
Yeah. I think we're going to upgrade the show starting next week.
Maybe I should sit in that seat.
Yeah, you could have here. We have a lot of fun going on over here. So I have, what do I have? I have 9:41. We got 19 minutes left. And I was told that when you came in, standing in for Al again, just for those of you that joined late, Al was called away on a trip. And just about 8 o'clock at our start, we looked over our shoulder here, or I guess Alex is looking straight forward. We saw that beautiful king here rotating off the runway as ALS. So Alex was kind enough to stand in and get us through this night, but I got a text from Al Waterloo, and he said, "Taking off now," and that Alex has a bunch of hangar talk items.
Oh. Well, yeah, I mean, I just, you know, I think we touched on one of them today about the cost of flying that you were saying. And the other thing I wanted to talk about, too, I know at our last breakfast, we talked about places that we can go to. For eating. I mean, some places you go to, they may not be as nice as some other places. Some are better than others. And I just, I don't really have a list of, where to go. I mean, I just, I've been to the same places where everybody's been to before, the Jet Room in Madison. My one favorite place to go to with friends when I go out and take them flying is to Eagle Creek.
Oh, the
place down in Indianapolis.
Yeah, EYE.
Yeah.
Echo, Yankee Echo.
Yeah, that's probably my favorite place so far. I've never been to Prairie du Chien, which I have some friends that go there, and that's a steakhouse that's up there. I think it's called the Black Angus. I'm not 100%, but I was just wondering if we had, what places you've gone to before, or maybe some of the viewers or listeners, I should say, that, had some nice places that were out there. I think the other place I've been to was, the place up in Sheboygan, it's in the hangar. I forget the name of that place.
I forget it as well. Now it's actually one of those places. I hate to say this, but when I've been there, the service has been a little lackluster.
That's what I heard.
But you get cloth napkins. So
right.
I'm
right.
Used to eating with paper napkins.
It's got a fake fireplace.
Fake fireplace, a big place. I don't know. It wasn't that busy when I'm there, but if it was just, I felt a little bit better about the service. I could give it more of a thumbs up. I've always enjoyed just going over to Schaumburg here, 06 Charlie, which, is close. It's a 5-minute flight for us, but people right. that come in from out of town really speak highly of it as well. So
yeah, I went there with Al and actually the guest that we had on the show. That was, like I said, his first ride in Cirrus. And Al Waterloo ordered something for me. I forgot what it was called, but it was basically criminal to eat. And he actually took a picture of it, put it on Facebook, and I was just like, ugh. I mean, I forgot what it was I had.
I always get the turbulence chopped salad.
Yeah, that's probably what I should have had, but what I had was no good. I mean, it's just,
yeah.
I said, it was criminal. But I just don't know any other places out there because I just, and I just never ventured outside of, let's say.
Do you want on airport property, walking distance? I mean, if you can get there from a crew car, obviously the world is opened up to you.
Yeah, no, I mean, a walking distance, you know, someplace that's maybe nicer than most, you know.
Well, if you go to Watertown, which, oh, it's Wisconsin, and I'm going to screw this up. I think it's Romeo Victor Yankee or Romeo Yankee
Victor.
Yeah,
I've been there. There's a Mexican place over there that I
go. So that one, you walk across, walk up the road and to the highway, and there's everything from Perkins, and there's this, a steak place there where you pick out the steak, and if you want, you get to cook it yourself. And that was pretty good.
That I didn't do. I didn't know they had a steak place there.
Yeah. Yeah, they have that. I enjoy going, actually a kind of a dump, but I always loved it for breakfast, was Lone Rock, which is just west of Madison, just because they have the, you can only order one pancake, even after they sold it to a woman. She said she made the pancake smaller, but they're still, it's like huge. It's like worth six pancakes.
Is there a VOR there?
There is, LNR.
Okay. Lehman, only reason why I ask is my friend with his bonanza, he did a round robin, and it was over the
Lone Rock VOR. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
There are a lot of great places. You know, I like going to Madison, also getting the crew car and going down State Street, and there's a nice Italian restaurant I really enjoy there. So if you're willing to do that, you can get a lot of variety just taking the crew car.
At the last breakfast, somebody say Bloomington. Does that make sense?
Bloomington, Illinois or Bloomington, Indiana?
That's a good question.
Probably Illinois. I don't know. I would imagine. I mean, you'd think a place like this would have something good. And
we used to have this 94th Aero Squadron before I was actually even flying, like, years ago. I used to go there for dinner every once in a
while. It went downhill.
In a blue moon.
And then now it's no longer. So. So if any of our listeners out there, if you have a favorite restaurant, $100 hamburger, upscale $100 hamburger.
Yeah.
Why don't you tweet us at hashtag SimpleFlight or write to me at M. Epner, M-E-P as in Papa, N as in November, E-R, M-E-P-N-E-R. And we can pass those along to Alex. I actually like going just down to Clough, which is a little, I mean, it's not a nice place, but it's a good place right there at,
there.
What is that? I can't remember, 102. Hotel or something like that. I forget.
Yeah. I stopped there once on the way over to, there was some place in the south suburbs over here, not too far from Frankfurt. And I went with, an instructor. I didn't have my private pilot's license yet, but I was just doing some training. It was with my wife, and it was a guy that I met over in, Traverse City, for the Aerostar convention. And actually,
that's
where he was parked. And so we went to go check that out. And, that was a real treat that night. That day, I should say. And, like I said, 25-foot runway, and this guy just flies in and out of it, no problem. And, his friends, like I said, I think I mentioned it before, they will not fly there. You know, they go about 5 miles out to, like, the next, you know, Class D airport, I think, or somewhere. Maybe it was just something with a bigger runway that they just can feel safer about getting in and out of. But, that was neat. And I think I stopped there for breakfast on the way there, actually. I was, you know, kind of in the area. So, yeah, it was all right. You know, like I said, wasn't really for me. You know, I'm taking my wife. You know, I think she expects something different. And, you know, sometimes I go out and it's just like, I just hate flying for food all the time.
Yeah.
You know,
that's what we do. And we have in our clubhouse the book, now that the clubhouse is getting reorganized, the $100 hamburger book.
Yeah.
And it's actually kind of old. I don't know if it's continued to be updated.
Yeah. There is a website too out there that I looked at, and I kind of just kind of browsed around on there a little bit. And, who knows?
Let's do this. Let's start going and adding to it. We'll make our own little book.
I was thinking about that. There.
Yeah, and we'll put them down, ones we like, upscale, downscale, you know, or downscale. Is there such a word?
Yeah, I don't know.
There is now.
Well, you know, one that you take your friends, one that you take your wife. I mean, you know, just.
And one you take your girlfriend.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess. If that works.
Yeah. So do you get to do anything now with the family? You got that beautiful SR-20. It's running like a champ. You've been out, done all the training in it.
Yeah.
What about taking some pretty fancy trips, like to Nashville or Louisville, some of these great cities that are in our plane right away?
Yeah, you know, we went to Kentucky, and I was on my way to Hilton Head. And my wife and I, we were going to take off, and, you know, the weather was beautiful for the next 3 days, and she kind of chickened out, and I was like, all right, it's like, you know, that's the beauty of this. We don't have to go.
Right.
If you're uncomfortable, we don't have to go. We can just go fly somewhere and, you know, go burn some gas and grab something to eat. And, you know, that was fine. And then I think the next day she kind of regret not getting up and going. And, you know, she kept talking about it for a couple of days. Oh, I should have went. And so we finally decided to go. And I told Al, I said, I don't think I should take this trip. And he goes, get up and take her and go. And I'm like, you don't understand. I said, you know, the weather's not good in Hilton Head, so I know I'm not going to make it there today. You know, we'll probably stop at, I think it was Asheville is where I wanted to go to, North Carolina. And I said, we'll fly there. And then I made the mistake, when I was in Kentucky to, you know, I gave a pie rep, but I didn't shut my wife off. So she's listening to these people.
Oh no.
And it wasn't, you know, anything that she wanted to hear, you know, chance of icing, this and that, blah, blah, blah. So then I see the look on her face. And I'm just like, you know, we just diverted to, you know, Lexington and we spent the night over there. So we got up the next morning. And I think it just kind of ruined it, you know, then we just never made it down that way. And I still wouldn't have made it into Hilton Head anyway because the ceilings were still like 800 feet or something. I mean, it was just kind of, the weather was a little icky. Once that weather was going to clear out, that's actually when I was going to be coming back home.
Nice.
And that was kind of the deal, but it just didn't work out that way. So I get home and Waterloo's like, well, how was it? And I said, it stunk, man. I said, he goes, what do you mean? I said, it's same thing happened to me again. I said, I went up, I went somewhere and I still didn't get to the destination.
You need your instrument radio.
I know.
You'll be fine after you get that.
And that's the thing.
It opens up the world to you and your family.
No, exactly right. And so I still wanted, you know, we still want to take a ride down to Hilton Head and go check that out. And, you know, my wife and I, we're going to go to our place to Arizona, believe it or not, next month sometime, I think is what we're shooting for once my daughter gets out of school. And, maybe spend a few weeks down there. And she's like, God, I really love for you to fly, sir. I'm just like, as Al would say, you know, you're miserable, you know, when you take off out of that high density altitude and you're climbing at 250 feet a minute. And he goes, you'll just hate your life. But that's just what you deal with when you go out that way.
Yeah.
But
what I love about the story is you've got a wife that's supportive and say, let's do this. Now she's asking, but she wants to make the use of it. She sees the value.
Right. And she's extremely supportive. And the one thing that happens with her, like she tells me, she goes, you get me somewhere. She says, it's all over. She goes, she said, I'll bother you like crazy. And I know that she's telling the truth. That's exactly what would happen. You know, so, you know, and I talked with Al a little bit and, you know, we talked about maybe taking a trip together down to Hilton Head, you know, just, you know, make sure I get there and that sort of thing. And, you know, I'll just kind of pile in and go and that would be good. And so, you know, I did block out the plane in the middle of May. So maybe I'll take that trip and, for the weekend or something like that. And if I'm going with him and, you know, at least I know I'll make it down there and make it back and it'll work out okay. And, you know, it'd be a nice few days just to go, you know, finally get her to the beach.
Now, where, separate from family, where is a place that you would love to go in the U.S.? And that, whether it was by car or plane, but now that you got the plane, maybe it's a little bit more real.
Oh, yeah. You know, I never been to Colorado. I'd love to go there. I actually have a friend that just moved out there now, so I actually have an excuse to fly there, if I wanted to do something like that. And, you know, that's probably on the list. And I always thought that, landing all 50 states by 50 or lower 48 by 48, I think is what I used to say. But, you know, as I fly through, you know, the country and then you really see, there's really just going miles and miles and see absolutely nothing. I mean, I
drove to Montana once. I know that feeling.
Yeah, I'm like, I can land here, but now what do I do? And, you know, you kind of have a newfound respect for the city of Chicago when you're here because, you try to compare it to here and you don't find any place like it. Now, I never, you know, I didn't fly out east yet, but I would like to go there. My wife would like to visit all those New England states, and that sort of thing. And I would like to take a trip out like that. And that's not as taxing as going west. And,
the terrain, you mean?
Density, altitude, you know, terrain, you know what I mean? It's shorter as well. You know, you can make it there, you can make it there in a day if you want to get up in the morning and go. And, you know, it's not going to be, you know, I can fly a couple, 2-3 hour legs.
Coming back, maybe something else.
True. But, you know, but it's definitely doable. And it's just like, hey, I made it all the way here. You know, we did it all in one day.
Yeah. I've told Al I want to see Devil's Tower.
in Wyoming. I want to see Mount Rushmore in
Memphis. Yeah, that's what I was going to say, that too, Mount Rushmore.
And I would love to fly to Maine.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like the end of the world, and I never – have I been to Maine? I don't think I've ever been to Maine.
If Nova Scotia.
Newfoundland, right? Let's go up there. Right. No. Actually, just got more territory at my job, and include two of the provinces in Canada. So okay. I might do that. I've got a bunch of U.S. states and a couple areas in Canada.
And Canada's cool because I mean, it's just right. It's not that far.
Right.
When you
right.
think about it. I mean, I flight plan some stuff to Canada, let's say coming around up the side here and, up by Mackinac and then going a little bit further up. And I was just like, wow, you're there already. And that's neat.
Yeah. Actually, we should have on the show, a gentleman. Al Riley, I think you know Al, and he has a single engine Comanche, and he flew it up to Alaska, and I would just love to hear that story, because that must be pretty cool.
Yeah. And he's the guy that's at the breakfast all the time, right?
Yeah. Not as much as we'd like him to be, but he's there on a pretty regular basis. And he's, got a wonderful Comanche, and, I've always liked that airplane. Matter of fact, I think you'd like it, just because I know you like fast cars. And it's like a Mooney. It looks fast even on the ground. It's sleek.
Right.
And actually, the Twin Comanche, I think, would be an airplane you'd like, too.
Yeah, that's the guy that actually I have to go burn some gas with. And he's the one that kind of gave me the whole rundown of it. He wants a 310 is what he wants.
A great airplane as well.
And he says he's looking for the right one. And before he saw it, his Comanche actually has boots on it.
No kidding.
Yeah, and he would because I refused to buy anything without him, he said. So
before you, I think before you got into aviation, AOPA, they give away an airplane. They gave away a Twin Comanche, and it was a Win a Twin.
And he lived in Greenville, South Carolina.
Yes, you do know that.
I looked him up.
Oh, okay.
Because I looked up his tail number. I found him. I was going to call him just because I had some questions, because I figured, he's been flying the plane. He knows better than anybody. And what ended up happening was I got a little lazy after, searching him out. About a month later, I found his plane for sale on Controller. And he was asking like $250,000 or something like that.
Wow.
So I ended up finding this other place down south that had two Comanches that I actually had them refurbished. And there was a guy, I was talking to the salesman there, and he had sold one of his Comanches, and then he broke the deal. And the reason was because the Win a Twin came up and he purchased that one. And I was like, did he pay that much for that? And he goes, no, I think in the end he said it sold for like $175,000 or $150,000.
And what is a Twin Comanche, a comparable one? I mean, was the guy asking a premium just because it was the AOPA?
Yeah, I think he was asking a premium because it was the AOPA. I mean, a comparable one that was pretty similar to it. I mean, same paint scheme and everything. I think they were asking about $110,000 or something, and I think they ended up reducing it to, $99,000, and it probably sold in, the $90,000 area or something like that. But again, it had more time on the motors though. They did have another one that had a lot less time on the motors, but it was, the panel wasn't as nice. But,
well, on this one, if I remember right, they had the DVD players in the back of the headsets and stuff like that.
No, it definitely was a nice plane. And, you talked about the twins burning, 10 gallons a side. I mean, that one there, the Comanche owners that I talked to, they burn anywhere between 14 and 16 total.
Right. That makes sense.
Depending how they run it. And, there you go. You have an aircraft, somebody that wants twin time. Let's say you can get a really nice one for $100,000, or less. Or let's say, they're there and, it's $25,000 a piece between four guys if you put a partnership like that together and you got
an economic, doable.
Yeah, you got an economical twin. And, I still have to go fly that and just go for it just because.
Yeah, you should.
Yeah,
no, I love the Twin Comanche. I used to get some time in it, way back when I was a lineman at Iowa City Flying Service in the 70s. I think you'd like it. It wasn't the most powerful airplane, but it was sleek and it just had a good sporty feel about it.
Yeah. The guy asked me, he goes, where do you want to go with it? And I said, well, I have a place in Arizona. He goes, okay, well, he goes, turbocharge is what you need because the single engine is 6,000 feet, is the max on one motor. And, He goes, your turbocharge, I think he said was, I don't know if it was 10 or 12 or something like that. He goes, so that's what you want. And you know, he's a real big twin fanatic, and, you know, he wasn't talking bad about singles, but he was just like, you know, everybody wants a bad mouth the twin. He goes, that's fine. He goes, again, the same story. If you're proficient, you know, it's the same story you hear all over the place. But he goes, I've had everything happen to me in any type of plane. He goes, and until you have a single engine go out on you, he goes, then come talk to me.
Right. Just doesn't want kind of like what you're saying, until you've flown a Cirrus, then come talk
yeah,
to me.
Yeah, you know, it's just, you know, that's why I'll fly it at night, because I have that option. I have that parachute. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
My daughter told me the other day, she was like, you know, if you pull that parachute, you know, I'll have a heart attack. I'm like, no, you're not going to have a heart attack. That's the whole beauty. You'd have a heart attack if I didn't pull it.
Exactly, you know? Right. Yeah. You know, yeah. So. You know what, we talked about the ALP, you know, on our field here, we have, I think it was 1997 Ultimate Arrow that was given away by AOPA and
oh, I saw that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice 97 one. Uniform Alpha.
Yeah.
And it's a great, I always liked the Arrows, and for 1997, it was pretty high tech the way they put the, Avidyne little MFD in there.
Right.
And, they really upgraded. Very, very, very nice airplane.
Oh, that is a nice plane.
So guess what? We made it.
Yeah, I know. It's time to go.
It's time to go. Yeah. Well, I really appreciate you sitting for Al last minute. Thank you so much.
I might have to sit with you next week too.
Yeah, or we'll pre-record, but you're always welcome. You're kind of part of the show on a regular basis.
Yeah, you know. Oh, yeah, that's right. You guys can pre-record. I forget all about that.
Tonight wasn't an option because it kind of last minute, but, our thanks go out to Sam Wiltsis, and congratulations to him for getting a job and passing his instrument.
That's awesome.
Ride, and to Tim Rilko for giving us a call from California and sharing his experiences and how we cut the cost of flying. So it was just great. Another great night of talking aviation.
Always is.
All right. So thank you, and thank you to our audience. We really appreciate it. And, of course, I wish you blue skies.
And tailwinds.
And tailwinds. There we go. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
You're listening to Simple Flight Aviation Radio with Al Waterloo and Mark Eppner on www.simpleflight.net.
Flight radio ready for takeoff.
What do you think about flying? Is it a sport? A business? Is it easy or difficult? Is it boring or exciting? Alan Waterloo and Mark Eppner think it may be any of those things, but they like to make it simple. This is Simple Flight Radio, where Mark and Al talk about the many aspects of aviation and the amazing people doing amazing things to make this world a better place.